Hi, this is Lisa Lane Brown from The Courage to Win, and welcome to Session 3 of the Instant Confidence Method, Career and Business Confidence. Now, this potent method will help you gain the self-confidence needed to get recruited and promoted, become the leading authority in your field, receive awards and accolades, and attract a boss who follows you around like a lovesick puppy. Colleagues will hang off your every word, clamor for your opinion, rush to do your bidding, greenlight your projects, and scramble to buy your products and services. Well, here's what you're going to learn and gain in this particular session. You're going to finally understand how to build your career or business around your unique talents and abilities, giving you unlimited intrinsic motivation to excel in your field. Taking action on your most cherished career goals will feel completely natural to you, no matter what your past has been, because of the unstoppable self-confidence that will be embedded deep inside you. You're going to be able to try new things, get connected and meet new people, take risks, and trust yourself to make career or business decisions without second-guessing them. Rejections and failures involving your career or business that used to rattle you are going to be non-issues. In fact, they will not bother you like they used to, because your confidence is going to be there inside you, ready to carry you to success. And speaking to people with self-assurance will actually become effortless for you. And that's why people will hang off your every word, clamor for your opinion, greenlight your projects, and scramble to buy your products or services. This session will have three parts. In the first part, I'm going to explain the true source of confidence when it comes to career and business. In the second part, I'm going to lead you through the instant confidence method so you can use it to program yourself for total career and business confidence. And in the third part, I'm going to lead you through an emotional visualization session that will attract career and business success to you by causing you to spontaneously take action on a daily basis towards your career goals. Well, as always, here is a summary of the building blocks of the instant confidence method. The three natural laws for self-confidence are like yourself, trust yourself, and believe in yourself. And the instant confidence method is face my fear, release my fear, and trigger my confidence. Well, where does career and business confidence come from? Well, going back to session one, you learn that confidence comes from two sources, both success and self-esteem. So in career and business, we know that if we take action, actions that are congruent with the principles of career and business success, we will naturally be successful in these areas. And also, when we have high self-esteem, we believe we can learn what we need to learn to succeed in any career, field, or business, even if we have no experience in it yet. Well, of course, we always start with the three natural laws of career and business confidence. So we know that there are natural laws, unchanging principles that always deliver a predictable result. And the example we used in session one is gravity. It doesn't matter if you know about gravity or whether you believe in gravity. If you jump out of an airplane, gravity is going to work on you. And the natural laws of career and business confidence are exactly the same. And if you follow them, you'll enjoy an immediate influx of confidence at your work or business. Natural law number one, you must like yourself. Well, we know that the first natural law for creating unshakable self-confidence is that you must like yourself when it comes to your career or business. And of course, to like yourself in this area, you need to be yourself, accept yourself, and stand up for yourself. Number one, being yourself. Well, the first step to being yourself in your career or business is to be 100% authentic in whatever you choose to do. The Beatles became a pop sensation in the 1960s, bringing British flair to the United States. They started out as a small garage band formed by 16-year-old John Lennon, who carried a dream and a love of music. At first, they were rejected by every single record label who had heard of them. And one label even said, "The Beatles have no future in show business." Even when they found labels to accept them, they were still badmouthed, though. They were constantly put down by labels who told them to change everything from the way they dressed to the way they acted on stage. But despite all the pressure to change, the Beatles did not bend. John Lennon said, "We used to dress how we liked, on and off stage." Authenticity is important because when you give yourself permission to be yourself professionally, you will have the passion and intrinsic motivation to become truly excellent. In the book Outliers, Malcolm Gladwell reveals why some men and women rise to prominence in their chosen fields, and one undeniable factor is the 10,000-hour rule. It doesn't matter whether it's the Beatles or Bill Gates or Mozart, all extraordinary achievers put in a minimum of 10,000 hours developing their skills, and they are no exceptions. And this doesn't mean the talent isn't a factor, because we must have some innate talent. But assuming that minimum base of talent, though, what takes us from good to great is how hard we work. And Gladwell says, the people at the top don't just work harder or much harder. They work much, much harder. And so to succeed, we don't focus on making ourselves rich or famous or powerful. That leads to get-rich-quick schemes and chopping and changing all the time. We focus on becoming world-class, an outlier, at something that actually helps people. I'd never do that much work. When I was 18, I wanted to become the best player in the world at my sport, so I put together an elaborate binder that included a 21-page essay on how I could improve my skills, monthly, weekly, and daily fitness regimens, goals for shooting sessions and practices, mental toughness training sessions for each week. And now this binder was my Bible until I was named captain of Team Canada 10 years later. I kept my binder a secret until a talented young player asked me for help. She wanted to make the national team. So I gave it to her, and she looked at it, and she finally confessed, hey, it looks great, but to be honest, I'd never do that much work. Now, there are two things about this story that I think are important. First, the dates. So by 18, I'd already been practicing for 10 years, and by 28, when I'd reached my goal, I had another 10 years under my belt. So I definitely reached the 10,000-hour mark. Often it takes 10 years to hit 10,000 hours, but it took me 20. Second, the commitment. My young friend loved her sport. She just didn't love it quite as much as I did. That's why she thought the binder was work. If I thought I'd been working in my 10,000 hours, I probably wouldn't have done it, which is why her path was actually the right one for her, and she went on to become a world-class athlete with a huge list of accomplishments that made her really happy. So every goal is a personal choice, and to succeed and be happy, we don't need to be a Mozart, but we do need to excel at what matters to us. We need to learn how to become highly competent in a way that's fun and easy. In 1 year, you'll be a local expert. In 3, a national expert. In 5, an international expert. And in 10, an outlier. And there won't be a ton of work involved. It will seem, for the most part, like play to you. And that's the secret to the 10,000 hours. So we start by setting a passionate career or business goal. Passion is what drives work ethic. And according to Entrepreneur Magazine, it's commonly assumed that most successful entrepreneurs are driven primarily by money. But we know that that's not the case. We know it's a passion for what they do. Most entrepreneurs I know believe they will change the world, says Jay Friedlander, who works with entrepreneurs at the College of the Atlantic and Babson. So here's your action assignment. I want you to take this opportunity to select a specific career goal that, if you achieve it, fills you with excitement. Because otherwise, if the goal doesn't fill you with excitement, it's not a goal. It's just a statement on a piece of paper. At this stage, I don't want you to worry about how you're going to achieve the goal. Just write down the goal as it exists in your mind in such a way that fills you with excitement. Go. Number 2, accept yourself. To review, self-acceptance, of course, means experiencing your emotions without resistance and accepting your current situation. And as we've been saying in this program, we know that accepting and not resisting ourselves is what paves the way for change, because we cannot be in an adversarial relationship to ourselves and hope to like ourselves and be confident at the same time. The King's Speech and You. Well, in 2010, the King's Speech film grabbed the Oscar for Best Picture, and this film is the story of Bertie, the man who became King George VI, the father of Queen Elizabeth II. Now, after his brother abdicates, Bertie reluctantly assumes the throne because he has a dreaded stammer and he was considered really unfit to be king. So he hires a speech therapist, a very unorthodox one, named Lionel Logue, and through their very unlikely friendship, Bertie finds his voice and he boldly leads his country through World War II. Now, we know that one of Bertie's challenges is that he's afraid to become a leader, and even Lionel says he could be a great man, but he's afraid of his own shadow. But this is normal. Being afraid to take a risk and put ourselves out there is normal. His bigger problem is he keeps rejecting himself over his stammer. He's constantly telling himself that because he's a royal, he, quote, shouldn't have a weakness like a stammer. So he hides behind this superiority complex, pretending he's better than everybody. And only when he finds the humility to accept Lionel as an equal does he start to improve himself. Now, I'm wondering, have you ever pulled a Bertie? Will you tell yourself you should be different than you are? Maybe you think you should be making more money or you should be in a different job. Now, the problem with this approach is that while ambition is great, it lacks self-acceptance. You know, you get so busy rejecting yourself that it's impossible to find the confidence to win. So we must start by accepting ourselves, warts and all. We don't have to resign ourselves to our current situation, but just make peace with where we are, no matter how humiliating you think your situation is. you can accept yourself anyway. And you don't need to approve of it. But when we do start to accept it, the problem doesn't seem like such a big deal. And then we're, of course, more empowered to solve it. Warren Buffett's $200 billion mistake. Warren Buffett, the brilliant investor and philanthropist, was interested in making money matters, making money right from childhood. He's known as the Wizard of Omaha and his now one of the richest people in the world. Now, he credits his success to hard work and perseverance, and he's well known for his investment wisdom. But even Buffett made some decisions he regretted later. And one of them was his decision to buy Berkshire Hathaway. It was rash because he did it out of spite towards a colleague and, quite frankly, flat out wrong. And he called it his $200 billion mistake. Well, why did he call it that? According to Forbes, Buffett wasted precious time and capital on a textile mill in terminal decline rather than allocate his funds in something more profitable, in his case, insurance. By Buffett's estimates, he had never invested a penny. Had he never invested a penny in Berkshire Hathaway, and had he instead used his funds in, say, Geico, his returns over the course of his career would have been doubled. Now, Berkshire will still go down in history as one of the greatest investment success stories, but it was a terrible investment and a major distraction that cost Buffett dearly in terms of opportunity cost. And here's what Buffett himself said about the Berkshire Hathaway deal. He said, if you get into a lousy business, get out of it. Now, this lesson reminds me of one of my favorite proverbs, which really is the essence of self-acceptance. No matter how far down the wrong road you've gone, turn back. I'm going to repeat that. No matter how far down the wrong road you've gone, turn back. So we think about any career or business decision that we've made. We zoom out and we have the courage to accept the situation and ourselves. And if that means making a change, it means making a change. Because we know that the courage to accept ourselves always paves the way for change. Here's your assignment. I want you to write down a sentence that acknowledges a career or business situation that you're holding some shame about. So, for example, I acknowledge I'm lower on the corporate ladder than I thought I'd be. I acknowledge I'm working in a job that does not challenge me. I acknowledge I'm not doing a great job with Project Z. Whatever it is for you that you need to acknowledge. And the more upsetting it is, of course, the more you need to do this exercise. So record that sentence below. Go. Number three, stand up for yourself. Well, healthy self-assertiveness is, as we know, the ability to express your wants and needs appropriately. It's really the essence of the phrase, I matter and I have a right to exist. Really acknowledging that you do have value. And when you believe you matter, you're willing to stand up for and fight for your deepest career and business aspirations, even if other people think it's some weird, silly pipe dream. Well, Hilary Swank is best known for her starring role in P.S. I Love You and Boys Don't Cry, and she's worth about $40 million today, but she didn't come from means. Instead of growing up in a house, she lived out her childhood in a trailer, while her parents struggled to earn money for the family and fought constantly. Well, acting helped Hilary distract herself from her bickering parents and the teasing she got from kids for being poor. When she was 15, her parents split up and her father moved away. To support her desire to act, her mother moved out to L.A., and they lived in her car on the streets. And when they weren't living in the crammed car, they stayed with friends while Swank auditioned for various roles. When several classmates taunted her for wanting to be an actress, she said, "You only have one life to live, and if you're not doing what you love, what's the point?" Now, this is a textbook example of the conviction, I matter. Here's your assignment. I want you to write out five different endings to the following sentence. If I were 5% more self-assertive today, now, of course, you're going to keep career and business in mind when you write these endings out. And here are some samples. I talk more in meetings, showcase my ideas rather than let the higher-ups decide everything. I confront my staff about performance issues. I take time off when necessary to revitalize myself. I tell the person who works next to me to be quiet when on the phone. I'd fire the client who's a pain in my side. Please go ahead, come up with five different endings to that. You must trust yourself. To gain unshakable self-confidence and belief in the self, you must trust yourself. And this means, of course, you have to teach yourself mastery and discipline yourself. Now, we know now that mastery is superior technique. And to achieve mastery in career and business, I really strongly recommend you embrace the following success principles. And the first one is called Mastering Influence, How to Get People to Yes. Now, one of the most critical and highest paid skills in any profession is the soft skill of influence, which is getting people to embrace our ideas, promote us, buy our services, or just start working together as a team. And influence has been called life's most powerful skill because with it, you can actually get people to yes, which is really a dream come true. Now, the first key to getting anyone to yes was revealed by Dale Carnegie over 43 years ago. And he said, there really is only one way under high heaven to get anybody to do anything. Did you ever stop to think of that? Yep, just one way. And that is by making the other person want to do it. When we show a person how saying yes will get him what he wants, the rest is actually kind of child's play. Win beforehand, the code of the samurai. Author Evan Pagan says that to get anyone a yes, we need to invoke the code of the samurai, which is win beforehand. So before we try to convince people of anything, we guarantee success beforehand. And how we do this is we deeply understand the other person's fears, frustrations, wants, and aspirations. And only then can we make a successful offer or suggestion or proposal. And how do we do this? Well, it's very simple. We listen and we ask them two main questions. Number one, what is your biggest fear or frustration? And number two, what do you want to achieve specifically? Ma'am, when I first heard about the code of the samurai, I was pretty blown away. I literally felt like I had been let out of prison. Because like most people, I'd been programmed to believe that if I wanted to have influence, I had to go into a room by myself, put on my thinking cap, and craft an amazing pitch that would dazzle the listener and therefore convince him. And I was really wrong about this. Influence is really about listening first. And when we're courageous enough to ask people their opinion, they will tell us what they want. And it turns out, says Evan Pagan, that our biggest opportunities lie in other people's unmet emotional needs. And so if we craft an offer that matches their needs perfectly, whatever we're trying to have them agree to will literally sell itself. I'll give you a personal example. Last summer, it was time for us to release a new program here at The Courage to Win for athletes and coaches. And we had a lot of ideas, but no way of making a decision about what to offer. So we decided to use the code of the samurai. I jumped on the phone and I interviewed 32 athletes and coaches. And it turns out they all wanted to learn three basic things. A, how to be more confident in competition. B, how to be the star player of their team or their sport. And C, how to deliver a peak performance. Now, these may sound really obvious to you, but they weren't to us. We had to hear it right straight from the horse's mouth. So we created a new program called the Confident Champion System, and it was tailored exactly to their needs. And it was actually the easiest and most enjoyable project we've ever done, thanks to the code of the samurai. So I don't know if you're preparing for a meeting or a presentation or a chat or a sales call, or if you need to motivate somebody that you're working with, or if you need to motivate your child or your spouse to do something, but you can use the code of the samurai to turn things around very quickly there. So here's your action assignment. I want you to select a person or group that you need to influence, someone you need to sell an idea or a proposal to, or even a product or a service. And I want you to conduct at least three interviews in which you ask them what their biggest fear or frustration is and their biggest want or aspiration is. And you're going to write down their answers in the space below right here in this particular handout. Now, the second principle for career and business success is think win-win. You know, over the past 16 years, I've asked about 6,500 people in seminars to reveal their biggest stressors. And here's the most common complaint of employees. My supervisor won't let me do things my way. She overrides and micromanages me. Now, here's the most common complaint of supervisors. People won't do what I tell them to do. They're either working on something else or doing our initiatives their way. Well, what's the obvious pattern here? It's that both people want their way. They both want to win. So they dig in and they make it personal. He's a dictator. She won't buy into my leadership. But the real problem is quite a bit deeper. It's that most of us are programmed in what Stephen Covey in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People book calls the win-lose paradigm. This is just the habit of trying to get our way, even when getting our way influences another person negatively or affects another person negatively. Now, the challenge with thinking win-lose is that it overlooks that there's another person in this equation. And while this other person may pretend to accept losing temporarily, he resents it. And these buried frustrations show up in passive resistance, overreactions, no motivation, crankiness, low trust, arguments, disloyalty, and even depression. So here's how a supervisor will typically go for win-lose. Just get it done. I don't have time to keep hashing this out. That's how we do it here. The rationale for what we're doing is confidential. You're on a need-to-know basis. Here's how employees go for win-lose. I'll just do it my way and hope he comes around. If I get the team on my side, she'll have to see that we're right. And I'll get to that project later. So if you're a supervisor, you might be thinking, well, what's wrong with getting my way? I'm the boss. I'm supposed to. And if you're an employee, you might be thinking, I've got to trust my instincts. Why did she bother hiring me if she's just going to override me all the time? The problem with this is they're both win-lose thinking. It's really deeply embedded in all of us, actually. The solution, of course, is the win-win paradigm. This is the mindset that says, I'm not going to commit to a major decision or a process or a strategy unless both of us buys into it. Now, the win-win mindset is a leadership secret of successful leaders. And yes, it takes time. And yes, it takes communication. But long-term, it's the only mindset that works to create lasting harmony in any partnership. So here's your action assignment. I want you to, in the space below, describe one situation that you're having conflict with. Maybe you're going win-lose, or maybe you're going lose-win. And I want you to describe what could be a potential win-win in this situation that you haven't thought of yet. It could be a third option that neither one of you has really thought of. So go ahead, write that down now. Well, the third principle for career and business success is really personal productivity. The average person is incredibly non-productive. According to Robert Half International, most employees work approximately 50% of the time. The rest of the time, they take coffee breaks, check their email, chat with people. The other 50% of the time, they work on what is easy to do, not on what is hard and important. You know, years ago, I worked as a management consultant for a major company, and we interviewed the CEO, and the first thing we asked her is, what is your biggest complaint about your employees? Without even hesitating, she said, they're all working on the wrong things. Harrison Ford's secret to success. You know, in a profession that prizes youth above all else, superstar Harrison Ford didn't get his big break until his mid-30s. And in fact, before his big break in American Graffiti, he was so unhappy that he became a part-time carpenter to support his family. But by 1997, he was ranked number one in Empire's top 100 movie stars of all time. Well, he gave a great interview in Success Magazine, and he gave us one excellent tip about personal productivity, and here it is. He says, make yourself useful. I've always thought the simplest thing you can do is make yourself useful. Be easy to work with, be a hard worker, and help people get the job done. Isn't that beautiful? So simple. Of course, we know that the mindset that allows us to get the job done is accountability. The current head of Apple, Tim Cook, is the highest paid CEO in the world. He joined Apple in 1998, and he's become one of the most prolific employees in the organization. And after Steve Jobs, the founder of Apple, passed away, he's just handled the company exceptionally well. And we know that what defines his mindset is accountability. He says, my own personal philosophy on giving is best stated in a John F. Kennedy quote, to whom much is given, much is expected. I've always believed in this. So here's your action assignment in the space below. I want you to write down one way you could heighten your personal accountability in your career and business right now. How could you be more accountable for results? Go. Number two, discipline yourself. Well, when it comes to our work, we must discipline ourselves to work on the 20% of activities that will bring us 80% of our results. The easiest and quickest way is to commit to getting outside our comfort zone. I'm sure you've heard of the comfort zone. It's a place we feel comfortable. We have it in food, tasks, and even driving routes. And of course, the comfort zone simplifies life because we don't need to exert effort or thought in the comfort zone. But the problem is it becomes a habit and we stop moving outside it and challenging ourselves, and therefore becomes the enemy of high achievement. Now, how do you know if the comfort zone is getting you? Well, there are a few signs. One is if you're bored. Another is if your life feels like repetitious and there's no novelty, or restlessness or lack of meaning, and you wonder, what's it all mean and am I meant for more? And of course, a final sign is inertia. And when you think about moving outside the comfort zone, it just feels exhausting. Now, the good news is it's actually pretty easy to move outside the comfort zone once you set your mind to it, the way Amelia Earhart did. She was the first woman to fly across the Atlantic solo. And she was driven by her passion for flying and to prove that a woman could be as good a pilot as a man. But what drove her most was her prized value of adventure. And she said, adventure is worthwhile in itself. Now that is tough to disagree with. She also said, the most difficult thing is a decision to act. The rest is merely tenacity. You can do anything you decide to do. You can act to change and control your life. And the process is its own reward. Now, the faster we get going, the more momentum we build. Because as Dale Carnegie wrote, men do not die from overwork. They die from dissipation and worry because they never seem to get their work done. Now, the good news, of course, is that in this process of conquering the comfort zone, there's a really key underused method that we can put into place right away. It's called simulation training. And here's what you do is you exaggerate your preparation to the point where the normal demands of everything that you do in a day seem very easy. Like when Rocky Balboa did one-handed push-ups. So what you do is you go way beyond until your mind and body adjust. And then tasks that used to scare you or intimidate you feel like child's play, really. And this was actually used originally in sports to help athletes get over their fear of physical pain. Back in the 80s, China got famous for overtraining their Olympic badminton players. And today, athletes use simulation training to deal with the pressure in competition. Tiger Woods' father was notorious for clapping his hands or tipping over a golf bag during Tiger's swing. Basketball superstar LeBron James and Kobe Bryant dribbled the ball while hired hands pummeled them with tennis balls. Now, you can use simulation training to get over anything that's outside of your comfort zone at work. First, you identify the task that scares you and that you avoid. Then you go overboard. And what you do is you assign yourself a ridiculous deliverable, something above and beyond, like way above and beyond. Now, I did this to get over my fear of recording audio programs because recording used to really stress me out. It would take me all day just to get psyched up to record just a few minutes of material. And then one day I said, enough, that's it. This is slowing me down. And I recorded an entire audio program, about 6 hours of material in one afternoon. And recording has been very easy ever since. And the cool part about simulation training is that it doesn't take any extra time. You actually can do it while you're getting real work done. So here's your action assignment. In the space below, write down three tasks you want to bring into your comfort zone. And make sure that you're selecting tasks that are going to impact your results massively. Go. Now I want you to plan a simulation training assignment that will bring each of these three tasks in your comfort zone. So maybe the assignment will be to do the task in half the time. Maybe the assignment will be to double your results. So for example, if you cold call people for a living, maybe you're going to try to cold call twice the number of people that you would normally cold call. Maybe your assignment will be to do a lot, many, many more hours of the very same task in the same day like I did with the recording. Whatever it is that's going to work for you, go. Natural law number three, you must believe in yourself. Well, the third and final natural law for creating unshakable confidence is that you must believe in yourself. And for this, we must reinvent ourselves and commit ourselves to the result. So reinventing yourself again, to achieve our career and business goals, we must invent a new and improved version of ourselves in career and business. Think you 2.0. And again, to do this, we focus on future possibilities instead of current limitations, because confident superstars and high achievers focus on possibilities, not limitations. They live out of their imagination long enough to dream a new future, even when they're not succeeding. Now, the tricky part, of course, is that we have to ignore reality as it stands right now. And recently, I was working with a group of athletes, and I asked them to imagine themselves 10 times better than they are right now. And at first, they just thought I was crazy, and they said, how can I believe something that's not true? Well, I said, is there a fear in your mind that isn't necessarily true, but you believe it? And he said, well, yeah. I said, the defense rests, I said. Now, please imagine yourself 10 times better than you are right now. So really, why is it okay to believe the bad stuff we can imagine, but not the good? And I'm here to say that if we're going to use our imagination to create fear, let's use it to create confidence, too. I love the story of NBA basketball star Steve Nash, because he toiled away in obscurity for years before eventually being voted the NBA's most valuable player. And he's a star today because he decided to use the power of his mind and believe in this new and improved reinvention of himself. And he says, people have always doubted whether I was good enough to play this game at this level. I thought I was, and I thought I could be. What other people thought was really always irrelevant to me. Once I figured out I could play in the NBA, I also figured I could be an all-star. Okay, here's your action assignment. Take 30 seconds and imagine yourself 10 times better than you are right now in your chosen field. Don't think it over and try to be rational. Just take a leap of faith with me. What would a person like this look like, work like, and do? Now, I want you to rinse and repeat this mental exercise in practice, before work, while you're driving, basically anytime you're prepping to do something every day for the next 7 days, and you're going to be surprised how much more confident you feel. Now, the second part of reinventing ourselves is committing ourselves to persist. Now, to believe in yourself, you must commit yourself to persist in achieving your goal through setbacks, loss, challenges, and disappointment. You must know in your heart of hearts that you're not going to pack it in at the first sign of adversity. As we've always said, human beings are not wired. We're not wired to persist. We're wired for instant gratification. So when things don't work out, we tend to fall into learned helplessness and give up. The good news is now that we know this, we can commit ourselves to persist. Richard Branson, the founder of Virgin Groups, which now comprises more than 400 companies, he just wasn't a whiz kid growing up. He was actually dyslexic. And he said, I wasn't a promising student, probably because of my dyslexia. But my parents did not see my trouble learning as a limitation. They helped me find strengths by teaching me to constantly look for challenges. Now, this ability of looking for new challenges and rising to the challenge allowed Branson to persist far longer than the average entrepreneur. And he remembers the UK's recession of the late 1970s coincided with a slowdown in our record sales and a lack of hits. We created a really close community at Virgin, and I wanted the people I worked with to enjoy their jobs, and I was concerned about job security. We were running at a loss, and I had to decide whether to consolidate our stores and rein back the recording business or follow my instincts and invest in new artists. Hoping to expand our way out of financial problems, I bought 2 nightclubs and invested more money in the record business. Its managing director, Simon Draper, was a great talent, so I backed him to create UK's largest independent label. So did you hear that? Hoping to expand our way out of financial problems, instead of contracting, he jumps into the challenge and expands it. But of course, he does it through persistence. And Brandon's last motivation rule, screw it, let's do it. Here's your action assignment. I want you to acknowledge one area of career or business that you've given up on, whether it's getting a promotion, changing careers, starting a business, or something different. And I want you to write it down in the space below. And then I want you to write down, how will you recommit yourself to persisting and succeeding in this area? Will you take the Branson approach of jumping into a new challenge? What's it going to take?